A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, the assistant editor of The Mirror, Darren Lewis, and TalkSport's European football man, Kevin Hatchard. Has Everton dropped into dangerous territory?
Henderson on the edge of the area, lifts it back into the Everton box. Scissor kick from Luis Diaz and headed in by Divo Origi. He loves playing Everton!
Despite the defeat, Frank's fighters showed a bit of heart, but Burnley beating Wolves has not helped their cause. The nervy relegation run-in just got a whole lot more alarming. Ring that bell, Chelsea will surely now finish in third, but they needed a little bit of help from a superhero after Jorginho's jig. United, in name only, Arsenal, a real team, and Newcastle absolutely smashing it. A rubbish VAR calls, brilliant subs, a title race to behold, and Jesus turns Watford into whiners. It's all on the best Premier League review of the weekend. It's the Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
Hey, hey, Kevin Hatchard and Darren Lewis, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm doing Diego Simeone today. No tie, no jacket, but okay. The black shirt is getting busted out for this evening.
Very impressed. Kevin, what was the highlight of the week for you?
Divock Origi for me. Remarkable how he keeps scoring these big goals in big games for Liverpool, even though he barely plays any football over the course of the season. So I was very pleased for him.
Yes, I did forget that I'm in the middle of a Liverpool sandwich tonight with you two. I have to be a little bit careful about that. So any of the severe criticism that's coming Frank Lampard's way, remember that, listener. That's the motivation behind these two. Darren, what have you been up to? What have you been doing?
I've been at Stamford Bridge, but I did try a rare experiment because I tried to listen to your show with Perry Groves, the Sunday exclusive.
Sunday session.
I did love your Burnley line. So I wonder if you just give it to us again when they scored that really crucial goal to take the lead against Wolves.
Yeah, it was nothing big or clever. I just said, what was I saying? I said, there are goals. There are big goals. And then there's this goal. I was very excited about it. I think Burnley should be very excited about it because actually that sort of set the tone for the rest of the day, really, didn't it? And put Everton under real pressure. My highlight of the week was standing in the tunnel after the game between Manchester United and Arsenal at the Emirates Stadium. And Scott McTominay was sort of lurking around having done and just about to do an interview. And he did an interview with an international broadcaster. And you know what it's like when you're in radio, right? They put you in that little cheap seats around the back of the tunnel. So there's loads of these little cabins where they do the interviews, but we were just behind a cloth. So we could hear the interviews that were going on next to us. And the interview that was going on next to us was Scott McTominay losing the plot, letting it all out, telling home truths, giving his ultimate verdict on how bad Manchester United are and have been over the course of the last few months and weeks. But you know what it's like when you get really frustrated and you're going to swear. You can't help yourself. You're going to swear because that's the only way you can articulate the point you're going to make. Darren, you know this well. You say, excuse my French, and then you say, but, blah, 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 and bleep, 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 right? But poor old Scott, he seemed to get himself tangled. He just started effing and jeffing and then went, yeah, if you don't mind me swearing. At which point the interviewer went, how did I do? No, Scott, you're supposed to do it the other way around. You're supposed to say, is it okay if I swear and then do it? And if they don't want you to, you can say, they can say no. But I suppose Manchester United often get things back to front. Right, we'll talk about them a little bit later. But first, the Toffees are in a sticky patch.
Tonight, we have heavyweight boxing live from Wembley. You won't get closer to the action anywhere else. But first, we take you pitch side, where a defeat for Arsenal or Manchester United will be one hell of a sucker punch. Saka tries to flick it against Varane. He does that. They want handball. They're not getting it. It comes to Xhaka, who shoots. What a goal from Xhaka! 25 yards out. He hammers it into the corner beyond David De Gea. With a firecracker of an effort. Surely that's all 3 points for Arsenal now, as their quest for Champions League football gets another significant boost.
Straight to Bruno Guimaraes, who digs it over the goalkeeper, into the net. It's a glorious finish. It's an absolute catastrophe defensively for Norwich City. Playing like that, they deserve to go down.
It finished Leicester 0, Villa 0, an afternoon low on quality, but Villa do end their four-game losing streak.
Manchester City 5, Watford 1, and it's Gabriel Jesus yet again with his fourth goal of the afternoon. He started the build-up play, played it out to his right-hand side, and Kevin De Bruyne just pulled the ball back to the penalty area and side-footed the ball into the back of the net.
And the full-time whistle goes. It's a goalless draw in the London derby, and Spurs have dropped two precious points in the race for a top four place. Their North London rivals Arsenal now sit 2 points above them in the table with 5 games to play.
Let's start with the Merseyside derby and defeat for Everton 2-0 to Liverpool. It means for the first time since August to November 1948, yes, 1948, Everton have lost 8 consecutive away matches in all competitions. And the story was here because of what else happened on Sunday, notably Burnley winning their home match against Wolverhampton Wanderers. Is Everton, because of this, in serious danger of relegation after 68 straight seasons in the top flight, Darren?
Yes, in a word. I think they were spirited for an hour, but they can't stop conceding goals. They don't score enough goals. And I think morale at the club is very low. Lots of us have been doing all through this season, looking at fixtures and seeing what they could win, what they might not win. And we've all seen enough football not to play this game on paper, because you never, particularly at this stage of the season, know where the points are going to come from. But the facts are that when you look at the Everton team, there is not enough organisation in that back line. They could squeak games 1-0 if they were organised. They could squeak games 1-0 if there was a little bit of know-how about that side. But at the moment, they're too loose, they're too shambolic, and I think they'll go down.
And you know, I thought it was fractious, it was naughty, it was dirty, it was spicy, it was at times malevolent, but at least it was competitive. And I must admit, before the game, I didn't think it was going to be competitive. Jamie Carragher afterwards ripping into Everton, scathing. He said the Everton players have been cheating their manager and their fans all season. To put in a performance as good as that against one of the best teams in the world at the moment, at one of the hardest places to play football, they made it so difficult for Liverpool. They had a real fight today. They need to look at themselves, because this was nowhere near what they do on a week-to-week basis. Was there enough in that performance, Kevin, do you think, to give Everton fans hope that they can compete to the end of the season? Or will they do what they usually do, revert back to type next week?
I think that's the key, Sam. I think if they can maintain that kind of performance, that kind of solidity, then maybe they're in with the shot. I thought they were very well organised for the first hour. Liverpool had to make changes, and it shows again the depth of quality that Liverpool have at their disposal. I thought they were a threat on the counter. Thought when he wasn't going to ground too easily, Anthony Gordon played very well. I thought he caused a real problem for Trent Alexander-Arnold. And I was a little surprised that he didn't continue to make that impact, and he got switched at one stage that didn't really help. But I thought they played really well for that hour. But Liverpool's pressure is always going to break you in the end. And maybe when chances came along, they could have taken them a bit more clinically. But in general, as long as they can play with that heart and that desire, they can certainly take something from it.
Now, you know me. I want Frank Lampard to succeed. I'm desperate for Frank Lampard to succeed. I was going through the stats prior to the game. And ahead of his first game in charge in the Premier League against Newcastle on February the 8th, Everton was 16th in the Premier League. They're 4 points above the relegation places, with games in hand in all of the sides around them, barring bottom place Burnley at the time. They're currently 18th. They're 2 points behind Burnley with one game in hand. Their goals per game are lower. Their shots are lower. Their XG is lower. Their touches in the opposition box are lower. They run more. They tackle better. They have more of the ball, but they're still losing. Now, what can be done? How much responsibility can he bear? Because he hasn't got any luck either, has he? Mina doesn't play again today. Godfrey's injured in the warm-up. They have to make a late change. All those plans that they've been working on over the course of the last 48, 56 hours go out of the window because someone gets injured just prior to kickoff. How much is it down to him and how much is it a wider malaise in the football club that has caused this problem?
I don't think it's down to Frank Lampard. I think that Everton right now are reaping the whirlwind. They are a club that thought that they could play to the gallery with celebrity signings, but there was no real cohesion or strategy about their recruitment policy. I think they've got a lot of players who individually are half decent, but as a team are not committed to what the club want to do. If you compare their resources with some clubs far higher up the table, they don't have as many, but there is a lack of heart within the side. And I take on board what you were saying, Kevin, about there was an organisation about Everton for an hour today, but that's the problem. There is organisation about the side for, say, one half or for 80 minutes or for 58 minutes, as there was when they played West Ham. Then they concede. There is always a lapse in concentration in every game that West Ham play. And they were lucky to get the points against Man United because they've downed tools on their manager. But all the other games that they've played, they've been found wanting at the back. And I think it's about personal responsibility for individual players at that football club. I don't necessarily believe that you can lay that blame at Frank Lampard's door because he can set them up. He can get them focused. He can give them a plan. But if they don't follow that plan, how can you blame him for that?
But there was so much in that performance that Frank Lampard could take from it. And bearing in mind, they were dealing with the pressure of the Burnley result just prior to it. I mean, it's going to work one or two ways, isn't it? It's either going to be so dispirited, oh, we conceded the goal in the end after literally defending for our lives for an hour. And that's going to have a dispiriting effect and it's going to make them cascade into trouble. Or it's going to galvanise them. They think, well, we can compete with Liverpool here. So if we can compete with Liverpool, we can compete with anyone.
But you compete with Liverpool if you take a point or you win. You don't compete with Liverpool if you play half decent for an hour and then concede two goals. Where are they going to take these positives? They've got, what, 6 games left. All of those games are going to be tough for them if they can't get organised and if they continue to give opposition team chances. That's why I'm so pessimistic about them. Mike Jackson's had a short spell in time in charge of Burnley. They've bought immediately into what he's trying to do because there are good players there. There are committed players there. I look at the Everton side, there are some committed players, but there are lots of players there, let's not kid ourselves, who went there for the money. And when it now comes to down to showing the heart to save the club, half that team can do it, but the other half, I'm not so sure.
I think this is big for Frank Lampard, though, because I think he did an adequate job at Chelsea, but not a sensational job. I think, you know, people made out that the transfer ban was some incredible handicap. He had amazing players at his disposal. And yes, he brought through some of the youngsters. Great. But they qualified for the Champions League, not particularly impressively. And I think you just got the feeling that defensively, he couldn't set the team up. And they're having similar problems now with him at Everton. And I do think if he's going to convince people in football that he is a credible coach at the top level in the long term, he has to find a solution to this. Because if he is the coach that takes Everton down, that's a stain on his reputation that will stay for a long time. So this is as big for him, if not bigger, than that squad of players.
you know and I know, if he ends up taking Everton down, he never recovers from that. No one ever will, because ultimately, the first coach in over half a century to take Everton into the second tier, that stigma is not going to be shaken off very easily at all. And I don't want that to happen to him. This is a guy who actually, you know, I know you say did an adequate job at Chelsea, but actually in the circumstances, I thought he did quite a good job. And Chelsea are reaping the benefits of some of those youngsters' experiences under Frank Lampard now, I think. And remember, four months after he left the club, they won the Champions League in Porto against Manchester City. So it wasn't all bad under Frank Lampard, and certainly needs a little bit of credit. We've got to mention Liverpool, and we'll say well done to them, because again, they've got the job done, and it's just a victory for squad game, isn't it? I mean, and the intelligence of the manager to make the change at the right time. Everton were giving them a problem. They switched it up. They changed it. The players that came on made an impact. And obviously they got themselves into a situation where all 3 points were secured. They're going toe to toe with Manchester City. Obviously, that is a big story. We will talk about Manchester City a little bit later on. Let's move to that Burnley game then, right? Because I don't think there's many people who sat there and thought, Sean Dyche, sack him. That's a good idea. Everybody, bearing in mind that Burnley seemingly had zero plan in place to replace him, not even in appointing a proper interim manager. They just promoted the under-23 coaches to just take it for a couple of days. Maybe they've stumbled upon something under Michael Jackson, because they have looked more front-footed, they've looked more aggressive, more assertive, and looked like the handbrake has been released. Was that all that needed to be done after all? I mean, listen, the game against Wolves, you could tell after 10 minutes they were going to win. They weren't brilliant. They're not a brilliant team, but they wanted it more. Darren.
Yeah, they did appear to want it more. That's now 7 points they've taken from 3 games under Mike Jackson, and they seem to be playing with a bit more freedom, it has to be said. I mean, listen, I still am not going to take these 7 points as a way of maybe playing down the job that Dyche did, because he kept them safe. And when you don't have a lot of resources, you do whatever you can. And he did. And he kept them competitive. He kept them in the Premier League. Football is a very ruthless industry. All of us know this, and everyone listening to this knows that. You can be the big cheese 1 minute, somebody comes in, replaces you, builds on your work, and suddenly everyone forgets what you did, and they start to go with the new guy in town. But I think that the job that Dyche did has laid the foundations for what Mike Jackson's doing right now. And I have to say, well, listen, it's not rocket science at all. The momentum now appears to be with Burnley.
Look, they tweaked it at halftime. Mike Jackson tweaked it at halftime. They got a good goal, Dwight McNeil to Weghorst, who centred for Mate Vidra. And that was a big call, putting Vidra in for the first time in a while. And they changed the system as well, went to a 4-3-3. There were a few nervy moments towards the end. Ashley Barnes saw a goal ruled out after kicking the ball out of Jose Sarr's hands. And then in stoppage time, Huang got a volley on goal, and they were trying to run the clock down, and Pope had to deny him with a decent save. But ultimately, when you are in a situation where you need points at that end of the table, winning back-to-back home games is a massive, massive boost. And it can actually, you know, turn you into almost an invincible group. And I go back to Leicester 2014-15, the year before they won the title. They were down, out, finished. They put together this terrific run at the end of the campaign, and that galvanised them going into the season. Now, before anybody is thinking that I'm suggesting Burnley will win the league next year, of course I'm not. But the momentum is a key thing in football, isn't it? And Burnley seem to have it at the moment.
Yeah, and I think the fixtures have fallen in a nice way for them. I think to get Southampton and then to get Wolves, teams that, I mean, certainly Wolves now certainly look on the fringes of Europe, if not out of it entirely. So I think that has helped. And sometimes it's just a new voice. And I don't think hailing what Mike Jackson has done, or Michael Jackson, depending on which way you go, hailing what he's done doesn't take anything away from Sean Dyche. That was a decade of excellence from him. The way that he's established that football club at Premier League level, there wasn't enough investment in the squad. I think that's plain to see. And he worked wonders. But especially when you've got a coach that's quite defensive, I think sometimes a new voice with a slightly new way of doing things can give players a short-term boost. The key now is, can they take that momentum through to the end of the season? Because that's what they're going to have to do if they're going to stay up.
Saka towards the far corner, tapped in by Nuno Tavares after a save by David De Gea, and Manchester United have conceded inside 3 minutes at the Emirates Stadium.
And then he gets it back. Now Nketiah's inside the area, stopped by David De Gea, helped on towards Nketiah. He's still free, pops it in, that one will count.
They are checking a possible offside here. It is offside, the VAR suggesting that it is offside, yeah. I think now they'll check for the possible penalty in the build-up to it. He's going over now, Craig Pawson, to check the monitor. It's a penalty. Saka for 2-0, a little run-up, left foot, he drives it into the corner. Two penalties in two games for Bukayo Saka. Sancho moves towards the edge of the penalty area, lovely little trick to get beyond Cedric, and then gives it back to Matic, who swings it into the area, and it's tapped in at the far post by Ronaldo. Ball delivered by Fernandes towards McTominay. Oh, did it come off a hand, that? I think it did, it's a penalty. And the referee had no hesitation at all at declaring Tavares had used his arm to block the ball back across the face of goal. Fernandes takes in a sharp intake of breath, a straight run up, then he curves it, then stutters, right footed, and hits the post. Here's Ronaldo, edge of the area, setting up Diego Dallo, who hits the post. Comes to Xhaka, who shoots. What a goal from Xhaka! 25 yards out, he hammers it into the corner. Manchester United beaten at the Emirates. Arsenal 3, Manchester United 1. Just when Manchester United thought it couldn't get any worse for Ralf Rangnick, they started this game with a series of errors that led to them being 2-0 down within half an hour. In truth, there was a lot in this game in which they were in charge for most of, actually. You know, they were on top. They were probably the most dominant force between the second Arsenal goal going in and Arsenal getting a third. But the game hinged on a moment, one moment. Bruno Fernandes electing to take a penalty ahead of Cristiano Ronaldo. What are you doing? He missed it. In fact, he had a terrible day all round. He could have been sent off. He had a role in Xhaka's goal as well. It was not a great idea to take the penalty off Ronaldo, although there are conflicting reports as to why that happened. When I spoke to Ralf Rangnick, he wasn't sure as to why the ball had been handed to Bruno Fernandes. But if you're going to take it, you have to score, Darren.
You know my views on that kind of thing. If you big yourself up enough to take the ball off somebody who's preparing to take the spot kick, no excuses, don't want to hear it. You have to score. And I think his penalty, Jorginho's penalty for Chelsea on Sunday afternoon, I think goalkeepers are starting to suss this kind of thing out. And I think that they're going to have to rethink it, because both penalties were just ridiculous. I think in terms of Fernandes, when he came to United, he was outstanding, as we all know, for a year and a half. That's kind of melted away into some really ridiculous performances from him. And he is a player crying out for somebody to get hold of him and get him back to the player he used to be. I'm not going to sit here and say that he's a bad player or that he's dragging United down, but I think we could all see that when Rangnick took him off, he was saving him from himself, because there were silly Hollywood balls, there was petulance, it was just a really immature performance from a player who is capable of far, far more. And I think his slump right now is symbolic of the general malaise at United. He's been sucked into that, but there is a really good player there, and hopefully the new manager will be able to get that out of him.
And Kevin, the thing is that one of my questions tonight, I'd written it down, was, you know, why has it gone so wrong for him? He scored 28 goals last season. He's only got 9 this, but Darren sort of answered it, really, isn't it? The fact is, there's so many players you can ask that question of. Why has it gone wrong for him? Why hasn't it worked for Sancho? What's happened to Varane? Why hasn't he developed into the player that we expect him to be, the man who won so many trophies at Real Madrid? Why has that character not turned up at Manchester United? What's happened to Luke Shaw? Why is he so good for England? Maguire, why is he so good for England, not for Manchester United? There's so many of those players that you can ask that question about. The answer is obvious. The whole club is in a funk that somebody needs to drag them out of. It's not an easy task, is it? I mean, if you were Erik ten Hag's agent, I mean, apart from the fact that he's getting paid very, very well to do it, there's not much upside, is there?
I think there is. I think there's the opportunity to work at one of the world's biggest football clubs. The problem he's got is that he will only be able to do so much unless the rest of it is sorted out. And I think Ralf Rangnick, if he's done anything at the football club, is that he's shone a light on the real problems there. Because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, whether you liked him as a coach, disliked him as a coach, thought he was any good, he was effectively a guy who was relentlessly positive about the club itself. Rangnick is much more realistic. And I think it's interesting that he's talked about attitude. He's talked about structure. He's talked about a club that needs open heart surgery and not just a few tweaks here and there. And he's effectively saying, look, these players are not working hard enough. They're not willing to work hand in hand with a coach. I mean, you can see that with the fact that Rangnick's way of playing has not been implemented at all. I mean, it's the polar opposite. He wants to win the ball back quickly, and he wants to attack with pace, and he wants to play this kind of vertical, fast-paced style. We've seen none of that. And one of the main reasons is the players are either unable to assimilate the information that he's giving them or unwilling to do that.
David Walsh wrote this brilliant column in the Sunday Times at the weekend in which he said, you know, Rangnick says this anecdote about Manchester United needing open heart surgery. Actually, the biggest surprise of all would be if the surgeon opened them up and found a heart, because they don't appear to have any. I mean, there's a lot of work to be done in the recruitment department. I was looking at some of the contracts that are coming to an end, people who may well move on. Pogba obviously is going now. Lingard's got to go. Cavani's got to go. Mata's got to go. Phil Jones has got to be moved on. He should have gone 2 or 3 transfer windows ago. Dean Henderson has probably got to go for his own good now. Eric Bailly has got to go. Martial, surplus to requirements. Van der Beek already out on loan. Brandon Williams already out on loan. Then there's Rashford. How do you solve that problem? Ronaldo, do you keep him for another year? The recruitment department has got to do so, so much. But it's got to be better than it has been recently. When you think that they've spent £180 million on centre-backs and they're still this bad, Darren.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been said many times that United are almost a Frankenstein hybrid of different managers' philosophies. And when you look at the squad, you can see that. But you're right in saying that there are lots of players at the club who also have been hiding, players who could have gone out and had first-team football elsewhere, had to do a bit of work. But it's an easy gig at United. You're in a good fat contract. You sit it out, even though you play a handful of games every season. And I think Ten Hag has to do what Conte did when he went to Spurs. Draw up a list of players that he wants to keep. The rest, get rid of them. The fascinating thing about me is the players that have allowed their contracts to run down. Because if you're at one of the biggest clubs in the world, surely you do whatever you can to force your way into the thinking of the man in charge. And if you can't get that, then you demand to leave because you have your personal pride as a footballer that you want to go elsewhere and play. I think the biggest problem at United right now, for me, is that they took the easy option in getting Rangnick instead of making a change last year. Well, when Solskjaer was sacked, they could have got a Conte. I still, to this day, refuse to believe the myth that Conte was too combustible. There are specific reasons. I'm sure Kevin, you will be able to outline them as well, why he left his other clubs. I think there were people at United who didn't want the spotlight
of him. They didn't want him. They're scared
absolutely.
Of him. That's the truth.
Absolutely.
And we said it to you at the beginning, right at the very time that this was all in the rumour mill and everyone was talking about it's an obvious choice for him to replace Solskjaer, get Conte in. The reason they were never going to do it is because he would demand, he would force, he would push, he would make them see the problems. He would force them into spending money where they don't want to spend money.
Yep.
He would make them make decisions they don't want to make. Get rid of this guy, get rid of that guy. They're even making it difficult for Erik ten Hag to bring some of his staff with him. He wants to bring McLaren and another guy, Van Gaal, in as an assistant. They made that process difficult. They want to keep some of the existing medical staff when he wants to bring his own. There's so much that needs to be worked out.
And Sam,
Manchester
this is
United
the thing.
People will tell you, no, that's not the case. We're making it very easy for him. We're bringing him. And there'll be people that ring me up and tell me, oh, no, that information's not right or whatever. But there's clearly no defined almost like nod to this guy and do what you want, because if they were going to put their faith in someone who's absolutely elite, it wouldn't be Erik ten Hag, because he's never proved that. It would be Antonio Conte, but they can't do that because then they'd have to relinquish so much control.
And then think about the Rangnick situation. The Rangnick situation sums up the muddle thinking at the football club. You've got a guy there that is a project guy and has been largely a football administrator. Yep. So here's a guy took Hoffenheim up the leagues, took them into the Bundesliga. I know that's a smaller scale, but he still showed that he could do it. With Red Bull, he did even more. It wasn't just about Leipzig. He set a template for an entire group of clubs. This is how we're going to do nutrition. This is how we're going to do recruitment. This is how we're going to have the facilities. They have the opportunity to truly tap into all of that knowledge and all of that experience. Instead, they did this weird bodge job of getting him in as coach. He admits himself he was barely involved in Ten Hag's recruitment, and they wanted him to concentrate on coaching the club. Why? Why did they keep him out of that? Why did they bring him in anyway? They had this weird consultancy deal that we still don't know what that's really about. And he doesn't
seem to
know either.
That's going to go to the wayside. That is. That's not going to happen, I'm afraid.
It's utterly ridiculous. And they're in danger, Sam, of becoming the English Paris Saint-Germain, because you have players there who have too much power, and there's... what is coming is a really important moment for that football club. When Ten Hag says to the people who run the club, I want to get rid of X, Y, Z, and the players need to have the knowledge that if I say they go, they go. If he loses that battle in the way that Unai Emery lost it at PSG, then we really know who has the power at that football club. And I think they're doomed to the same cycle as Paris Saint-Germain, except Paris win things and United won't.
Okay, let's talk about Arsenal, because they obviously have put together back-to-back results against Chelsea and against Manchester United without being particularly brilliant, but being a team. That's one thing you've got to credit Arteta with, is that he's built sort of a group of unified bodies that want to work for him. And no one sort of typifies that more for me than Nuno Tavares, who he dragged off after 35 minutes against Nottingham Forest in an FA Cup. And I spoke to Nuno after the game and I said to him, like, how have you got... because he scored his first goal. He walked into the interview room and I thought, what am I going to speak to him about? Because actually, he ain't played particularly well. He's given away a penalty. He's supposed to be playing at left back, and he's been playing almost as a centre forward for most of the game. He's left more space in behind him than you would do for a Volvo XC90 in a car parking space. For the whole
cars
of the game.
Are available.
What am I going to say to him anyway? What I did say to him was, how did you react to that substitution against Nottingham Forest? What have you done to get your mind right to come back from that and then be part of this team that is now probably favourites to reach the top four? And he said, I had to change my mind. Mikel Arteta made me change my mind. He understands us. He talks to us when we're sad. He can spot when we've got a problem. He can come to us and sense that when there's an issue, and he will help us solve it. And there is some sort of like cult of Mikel that he's built at Arsenal, which not only is sort of being bought into by the players, but the supporters as well. Because even when there were times in that game where they were second best to Manchester United, who are not very good, the fans stuck with them. They stuck behind him. They didn't get that nervous energy which they have been famous for in the past.
I think at Arsenal, there is this mantra, trust the process. And for long periods of time, it's been very binary. When they win, lots of people do trust the process. When they lose, they don't, quite simply. But it's very clear that...
The process, Darren, do you?
Well, actually, funnily enough, I do, because when you look at what he's done...
You didn't, though, did you? You were like me. You're a bit skeptical, and now you're starting to believe, aren't you? He's brainwashing us. We're going to end up walking around going, in Arteta, we trust. We're going to have T-shirts. We trust the process on by the end of the season.
I'll tell you why. Because when he loses, he doesn't really deviate from what his plan is. And it's very similar to the plan that Pochettino had when he was at Spurs. He got rid of the older players. He only wanted to work with the younger ones and selected older ones. It's the reason why all these people deriding Pochettino's work at Paris Saint-Germain and thinking he's a bad manager because of it don't actually understand him. The newer breed of managers, or the relatively younger managers, they want to work with younger players who buy into what they're trying to do, who want to work hard, who want to roll up their sleeves. And I think to a large extent, Arteta's made his own luck with these players because he believes in them. They will get better. They will make mistakes. A little bit like the Ajax when they develop players and they stick with them when they go through their troughs. But here in England, we're very impatient and we kind of lose heart with managers when players go through the kind of cycle.
Not here. He's not here. Stop. I'm going to go up crook. He's not here. He can't hear you.
All I will say is this. I think as far as Arsenal were concerned, regardless of where they finish, Arteta's earned the right for people to trust him because he's reshaped that side in the last 2.5 years and they will get better. And I think they may be 2 strikers away from being a seriously good side.
Listen, their arch rivals are Tottenham Hotspur and they're their arch rivals for the top four as well, Kevin. I don't know how much you saw of the Brentford-Tottenham game, but if you only saw the highlights, lucky you, because I sat and watched 90 minutes of that football match, and that is 90 minutes I will never, ever get back again. There was zero to love about that game, apart from possibly the fact that Brentford came up with this corner where Ivan Toney managed to get free 3 times in a row in one half, and nobody noticed this 6'4" guy peeling off at the back post.
I think in the grand scheme of things, it's not too bad a result for Spurs, but I agree with you, Sam. I thought they were really poor going forward, offered very little, took them so long to get into the game. And I think that that's a concern for Tottenham. I think the general direction of travel is good. I think they have improved under Conte. I think all of the stats will tell you that. The results will tell you that. The performances, the eye test will tell you that. But now they've got to find consistency. And I think, you know, they've looked flat in attack. And that's strange when you bear in mind the attacking quality they have. It's quite odd to have had the Brighton game and to have this Brentford game where they didn't really threaten at all. So I still believe Tottenham are in this. There's no question about that. I think they're pretty much neck and neck with Arsenal. And I think you'd look at the amount of time it's taken for Arteta to get Arsenal to where they are, and the amount of time it's taken for Antonio Conte to get Tottenham to where they are. And I think that that pace of change has been quicker at Spurs. So still think it's going to go down to the wire with both of those clubs.
What do you think the issue has been with Tottenham, though, Darren? Because have they hit the wall? Because the fullbacks aside, they've played literally the same team for the last 6 weeks. Or is that the issue, actually? The fullbacks that they've got now are just not as good as the ones that they had a couple of weeks ago when Doherty was available for them, Reguilón was more available for them on a regular basis.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Emerson Royal is just not good enough to be at Tottenham, and I don't expect him to be there next season. I don't want to be too disrespectful about him, but I could. There were moments
not the
in
first
the game
time you had a
go
at Royal, though, is it? Let's be honest.
So you Royal of a cheese. I think as far as he is concerned, his decision-making is poor. He's easy to mark out of the game. He has a mistake in him in every match. And Conte simply doesn't trust him. Also, added to that, Brentford were never going to be easy to play against. We know about all the good results they've had this season, particularly at their own stadium. Teams have realised that if you drop deep and deny Spurs space in behind, they've got to find another way, and they struggle to do that. But I don't expect that to continue. Leicester play far more open. They're a side that don't tend to park the bus. They go to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium next weekend, and Arsenal got a very tough trip to West Ham as well. So the picture, I've always described the top four, as you know, Sam, as snakes and ladders. I know you're making that face, but West Ham six changes today.
They got to West Ham, who are in the middle of an Eintracht Frankfurt semi-final. Is that the easiest trip in the world? Another one for Lucky Mikel.
Not really, because I think the West Ham side that played today, they were very unlucky to lose. And well, I think
Dawson's can't play next week. So literally, Masuaku, Cresswell, Soufal, they're going to play as the 3 centre-halves.
Yeah, but I think they played... I was at the game. I can tell you they played well today. It might not have been spectacular, but they were organised. They frustrated Chelsea. And basically 6 minutes from time, one mistake allowed Chelsea to get a foothold in the match. But they played very well.
Let's talk about that game, because Chelsea beat them by a 1-0. And it was pretty dull until 6 minutes from time when Jorginho had his life saved by Captain America. Jorginho had to take on what can only be described as a pitiful penalty.
thought you were going to say something else there.
Well, I would have done, but I probably would have sworn and then afterwards said, sorry, is it all right if I swear? Because I work on the same logic as Scott McTominay. Craig Dawson sent off for denying Lukaku a goal-scoring opportunity. The rest of the game was pretty forgettable, but the pass, Kevin, from Marcus Alonso to set up the winner was beautiful.
Yeah, it's glorious. And that's what Chelsea, when they're good under Tuchel, should be all about, that wit that we've seen from the wing-backs. And I think the injury to Ben Chilwell's really hurt them this season. Obviously, Reece James has been in and out. Just on that Jorginho penalty, he's missed a few big ones now. I mean, you think about Italy not qualifying for the World Cup. I mean, that was down, you know, to a lot of things. But one of the big factors was a couple of big penalties that he failed at from the spot. It was a dreadful penalty against West Ham, missed one against England, of course, in that European Championship final. So I think he's going to have to maybe review his technique. That hop, step and the jump isn't really working in the way that it was. But it was a strangely flat game.
Time to outlaw the stupid hop, skip and side foot penalty efforts, which are goalkeeper dependent. They know about them now. It isn't a secret. They watch videos of you. They research you. They've seen your last 20 penalties. They know you missed two crucial penalties against Switzerland and it cost you a place at the World Cup. They know you missed one in the European Championship final. They are going to psych you out. Fabianski is going to walk up to you just beforehand and go, I've seen you do this thousands of times. I know what your plan is. Clearly, Jorginho realizes this. Just before he hits the ball, the panic on his face as Fabianski stares him down and decides, actually, I ain't going anywhere, fella. So where are you going to put it now? And then, surprise, shock, only a half tap of the ball and it dribbles into his arms. I mean, for God's sakes, the technique is done. Get rid of it. It can only ever be a surprise technique anyway. And the idea of developing it as your technique was always a bad idea because you can never do it for a long period of time because it's very easy to read once you know what the plan is. And once people know, just stand there and wait for them to kick it, there's nowhere to go.
Well, think about Lewandowski, Sam. Think about the way Lewandowski takes his. He does a shuffle. It's not a jump. He does a little shuffle, but he doesn't half smack the ball when he hits it. And that's the difference because even if you're going to do a shuffle like that, you have to hit the ball hard, because then you set the goalkeeper out of it. If you do your shuffle, and even if the goalkeeper goes the right way, if you still smacked it into the corner, then you're fine. But if you're going to hit it at pretty low pace once you've done the jump, then you're in big trouble if the goalkeeper gets it right.
Talking of low pace, what's happened to Chelsea, Darren? They look like an electric car that's running out of battery and can't find a charging point anywhere. They've got range anxiety, haven't they? Why? Are the games catching up with them? What's happening?
Well, I think they're missing some leadership at the back. No Antonio Rudiger, who confirmed he wants to leave the club. We'll find out in the next few days and weeks where he's going. Trevor Chalobah's come in, but he hasn't played that much football of late, and it shows. They do look a bit leggy. They did look like a side that were either waiting, I wrote in my match report, for the FA Cup final or even for the summer so they can get to the beach. They just didn't look like the Chelsea of old. But, and it's a big but, Tuchel defended them and said that it was the way that they played was slow and deliberate. And although it might look quite apathetic, if you like, to observers outside, they played that way as a way of being able to get past a West Ham side that had set out to frustrate them. Make of that what you will. I'm not quite convinced. I was disappointed by what I saw at Stamford Bridge, and they're going to have to be better against Manchester United on Thursday night.
Okay, let's look at the rest of the weekend's matches, starting at City.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
City 5, Watford 1. So City have now won the last 15 meetings in a row over Watford. That's never happened before in English football. It's a football first in this country. And they've done it, scoring 58 goals, conceding 9. It dates back to just before the Thaksin-Shinawatra deal. But it's like they've decided, Watford, when they play City, there's absolutely no point. The last few scores have been 5-1, 3-1, 8-0, 4-0 and 6-0. I mean, they've lost 25 games in all competitions this season, Watford. That is a remarkable achievement to lose that many games, Darren.
Yeah, it is. But then on the flip side, the model at Watford that everyone defended when they sacked Sisco and they sacked Gracia and they sacked so many of the managers and the Watford fans said, oh, no, we know what we're doing. Well, it's coming back to bite them right now. I feel sorry for the fans, absolutely. But the owners of Watford are getting what they deserve because...
I mean, you could say stung the Premier League, the Hornets.
You could indeed. You're full of those jokes today, Sam. But you're absolutely right. Look, I think as far as Watford are concerned, and every team that is in the Premier League is concerned, you need stability. You need an identity. You need an ethos. Watford simply collect players, hand them to a manager and say, make it work. And even if a manager manages to do that, they still get sacked. I think the way that they treated Sisco was disgraceful, threw him overboard at the first sign of trouble after he took them up, and now they're getting what they deserve. And I would imagine that he won't have too much sympathy. I certainly don't.
You talk about what a football club needs to be successful being built on stability. Well, Manchester City have certainly got that. And in Kevin De Bruyne, they have got one of the world's most remarkable players. His ball for the second goal is one of those where you just go, wow. I mean, I think anybody could have scored it because it was such a delicious delivery, Kevin.
And that's what he's all about. And I go back to when he was at Wolfsburg before he was at Manchester City and how good he was for them. And he was doing that game after game after game in the Bundesliga. And he's just carried on at an even higher level. It's incredible consistency. It's not just the technique, it's the vision as well. I thought Gabriel Jesus was excellent. And I think his journey at City has been really interesting because he's quite selfless, really. He does an incredible amount of work for the team. Pep Guardiola's used him in a wide role, sometimes through the middle, sometimes not. And Guardiola always speaks up for him in public, even when he's not getting the goals and maybe not having the best of performances. So he's clearly a valuable member of the squad. And I thought he was sensational, albeit against an atrocious Watford team.
They are atrocious. Pep Guardiola's got a lot to negotiate in terms of fixtures, and he won't tire of telling you that. And the numbers that he hasn't got, stop. But I thought it was interesting that he was saying they do 10 or 15 minutes of actual work on the training field now, and that they just recover and socialise to maintain their camaraderie in between games now, Darren.
Yeah, because they have their training sessions against Watford. That's why, because that's all that was at the weekend. It was so bloodless. It was like a racehorse going past trees. And I think as far as City are concerned, they've been here before. They've got the experience. They've got the know-how. And the camaraderie is there too. I think with the top teams, all of us sympathise in some respects about the fixture congestion. We all know why that is the case this year.
Do we really sympathise?
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're still... Listen, we are being entertained by top-level sportsmen. And we do want their well-being to be prioritised.
Absolutely. But haven't they got bigger squads than they've ever had before?
Well, absolutely, but they're competing on multiple fronts and it's a lot of games to be able to do that. Listen, The consistency level of City and United right now is better than any other pair of teams challenging for the title we've ever seen.
Definitely mean Liverpool, not United.
Yeah. I was quite shocked there, Darren.
Sorry. United would love to be consistent like City.
United are consistently bad.
They're as consistently bad as City are good, yeah.
Can I start that
one? I think we should definitely leave that in.
Yeah.
That's got clickbait written all over it.
Oh, yeah, well, we're quiet. Listen, the consistency level of City and Liverpool is higher than we have ever seen in the Premier League. And they've needed squads to be able to do that, to manage that, to cope with the intensity of the games that they play in. And we are the beneficiaries because we are seeing, I mean, I've likened this title race to anything in any sport in terms of duels we've ever seen, because it is that a high quality. But to do that takes a huge amount of emotional intensity, mental intensity, as well as physical intensity. So yeah, I do have sympathy for City and for Liverpool as well.
I don't. No, I don't.
Oh, good. So I thought I was just being harsh then.
No,
I don't have sympathy for them.
No, I think the quality of squad is immense. It's just ridiculous. The amount of players that City and Liverpool can bring in. And I think sometimes what we forget a little bit is that you can bring young players through, and Liverpool have done that. City have done that. You know, there are guys like Cole Palmer at City. We've seen Harvey Elliott do well, Curtis Jones at Liverpool. And I think sometimes we get obsessed with players that get brought into a squad. What about the players that you can develop yourself? And I think that has to be an element that we continue to focus on, because you have to concentrate on that to a certain extent. And obviously the level might drop a little bit, but I don't think we should get the violins out for these top clubs. Yes, they have a lot of games to play, but it's a nice problem to have. And I do think if you're really struggling, well, you need to develop young players as well then.
One team who won't have to worry too much about trying to entertain us next year, and Norwich, to be honest, they didn't really worry about that this year either. They're going to be relegated soon enough. They played Newcastle at the weekend. Newcastle certainly are going to stay up. They're not anywhere winning a title yet and might not be for a few years, but do you know what? They're going to have a say as to who might win it with their next two opponents, Kevin, being City, and next Saturday live on TalkSport, Liverpool.
Yeah,
and they're going
right into
those matches having won their last four and conceding once in that run.
Yeah, you have to give Eddie Howe a huge amount of credit for the job that he's done. Obviously, it helped that he was able to spend a fair bit of money in the winter window and bring in a player of the quality of Bruno Guimarães, and I know he's only relatively recently sparkled, but I think that is amazing to be able to bring a player of that quality into the relegation battle. Kieran Trippier coming in, obviously, certainly at the start, made a big difference. But I think a player that's already there really caught the eye at the weekend, and that was Joe Linton, because there's a guy that has been revitalised by Eddie Howe arriving. I think Eddie Howe was realised what he is rather than what he isn't, and trying to make him into something he's not. And he's somebody who can play. He's not an out-and-out striker. He is somebody that can operate a bit deeper, operate in tight spaces. He's somebody that's brilliant at pressing when he doesn't have the ball. And he can be a goal scorer, but he was never a regular goal scorer in Germany with Hoffenheim. He was this kind of unusual hybrid player. And I think because Howe has played to his strengths, he's starting to get the best out of him. You have to give him credit, Joe Linton, for the way that he's gone away, really worked on his game. He's gone to Howe and said, look, what do you want me to do? How can I get better? How can I fit better into this team? And it'll be like having a new signing, I think, for next season, because I think he's really improved in the last few months.
There was a really interesting interview in The Telegraph. This game finished 3-0 to Newcastle, by the way, with Dean Smith this week, in which he discussed the predicament at Norwich, suggesting that it was the six defeats in a row over Christmas that had basically been the point of no return for the football club. He talked up the ownership and the sporting director, but we have to see that interview through the prism of his job situation. He's going to big up the ownership. He's going to big up the sporting director. I don't think that they can say that any of their signings over the course of the previous summer were a success. And the truth is that they spent £50 million, which was probably not enough, Norwich, and they spent it badly. And although you can understand why they don't want to bankrupt the team, they didn't want to bankrupt the club, and I understand all the sort of excuses that they've come up with in why they have failed to be competitive, they still have to be held to account, because when you look at Brentford, they've spent less and signed better. When you look at Palace, they've spent around the same amount, but spent better. And that must be acknowledged. And even other teams in and around that area of the division have spent less than Norwich or similar sort of amounts and been more competitive. The Premier League is not a free hit and should never be treated as such, Darren.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. Not much for me to add. I think as far as Norwich are concerned, you can see why they're struggling to attract quality. They're a side whose ambitions have limitations. And what the future holds for them is aspiring to get back into the Premier League, take the money and don't spend very much of it and go back down again. I can't see how that could be a model that tells players that you are trying to bring to the club that you are anything more than a yo-yo club.
Leicester nil, Aston Villa nil. Not really much to talk about in this game. It was pretty boring. Jamie Vardy's return off the bench failed to inspire Leicester to victory as they were held to a drab goalless draw with Aston Villa. The striker made his second appearance since December after hamstring and knee issues. Vardy's comeback as a second half substitute offers them a huge boost though, doesn't it? Going into the Europa League conference semi-final against Roma on Thursday, Kevin.
Yeah, it does. And they're going to need that attacking quality, that ability to stretch the Roma defence. I think Roma in the Conference League have certainly played very well. Tammy Abraham's loved that competition, scored lots of goals in it. And that's been part of what's been a remarkable season for him in general. Roma have got a bit of momentum, I think. So that's going to be a real test for Leicester. But I think one of the things they can take from the game against Villa is another clean sheet. Because for most of the season, they've been hopeless defensively. But Wesley Fofana coming back has made a big difference. They look a lot more solid. I think if anything, they've gone the other way. And Brendan Rodgers has talked about that and said, we just don't look clinical enough in the final third. So you like to think that Jamie Vardy can actually add to that. I think it's a great semi-final for the competition, because I think we've seen some great stuff in the Conference League with the smaller teams really benefiting, really enjoying that European adventure. But I think to have a real blue chip tie in the semi-finals between a good Premier League team and, you know, one of the more notable Serie A teams, I think that's great for the tournament.
Yep, I agree. Brighton 2, Southampton 2 was Sunday's other game. And the last game that we've got for you on this particular edition of the Game Day podcast. This was a terrific match right from the very start, mainly because of the mistakes, really. But opportunity comes from error, boys. Forster and Salisu getting tangled from a cross inside 80 seconds that sets the tone. And Salisu kicks Forster in the head, which then sort of disorientates him. And that's why Danny Welbeck can score. And then Salisu scores a ludicrous own goal. And then Brighton, well, at this point, 2-0 up. And obviously, my lights have gone out. We've obviously been waffling on far too long. All the lights in my little room here have gone out. I'm just doing the dark. Absolutely. Don't worry about it. I don't mind it. Turn the lights down, gets a little bit romantic. Oh, Lucy's put a little bit of romantic music on. Oh, I love it. Yeah, that's a bit better. Can you just tell me now is the time for lovemaking, Darren? Can you do that? Say it in my ear. Just
not in
it,
this series. On, not in this series, I'm afraid.
Just do it, Darren. Just say it to me.
Kevin, why don't you say it for
I'm
this
really
series?
Scared.
Yeah, sorry.
I don't know what's happening.
Yeah. Should we go back to the Brighton major error, which was giving a free kick in what can only be described as the JWP zone, the area in which James Ward-Prowse is definitely going to score from. It's his 14th direct Premier League free kick, wallop, game on at that point, and then inevitably they're going to concede another one because Brighton just can't ever win at home. They haven't won since Boxing Day at home at the Amex Stadium. What is it that they don't like about it, Kevin?
They're such a strange team, aren't they? Because, you know, you look at some of their performances and they should get so much more out of them than they do. The fact that they just don't have consistent goal scorers, that doesn't help. And I just cannot work them out. Of all of the Premier League teams, Brighton are the one I find the most curious, because the theory is if they had a really reliable goal scorer, suddenly they take off. But I'm not entirely sure that that's actually going to be the case. Just about James Ward-Prowse, by the way, I read a ridiculous stat that he's got the same number of free kick goals from the start of last season as the big six teams combined. I mean, it's utterly absurd. And what I loved about the free kick in this game was that he spotted the gap in the wall, didn't try and absolutely hammer the ball. He just placed it in the bottom corner through the wall. So he has that mastery to be able to score different types of free kicks, let alone just one type.
Darren, Kevin said that they're one of the most sort of baffling sides, Brighton. But actually, Southampton are a maddening team, aren't they? Because what happens to Ralph Hasenhüttl in the summer? Where does he go with this group? They've got new owners. They've got a different sort of ownership model in that they're trying to build a sort of Red Bull 2 franchise arrangement with this new Balkans owner. They're capable of heroic runs, super results. They'll beat some of the big teams or stop some of the big teams from winning. And then they'll go. Just every now and again, they'll just go. They'll lose 9-0 and then they'll lose 6-0. And then they'll just go five games without a win. They've conceded two or more goals in 10 of the last 12 Premier League away games. You can't do anything if you always start 2-0 down.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think this is a Southampton side right now playing with their minds on the beach because they pull off a wonderful result beating Arsenal, and then they go and lose to Burnley, and then they find themselves two goals down, as you've been saying, to Brighton. I think there's a lack of concentration there. They do have quality when they choose to turn it on, but at the moment, they're really inconsistent. And when you ask where they go from here, actually, I would ask, where does Hasenhüttl go from here? Because I know he's a very ambitious man, and there will be one or two clubs looking at him to see if he fancies a team with a little bit more quality and a bit more consistency.
Right. Thank you very much for turning up looking glorious, both of you. We're back on Thursday previewing all the weekend's footballing action. Download the podcast from the usual positions. We've got live Champions League football on TalkSport on Tuesday and Wednesday night. And then I'm going to West Ham on Wednesday. And then, Kev, we need to have a little chat because I'm going to Germany the week after. And you need to let me know what bars to go out to. I mean, sorry, a little bit more about Eintracht Frankfurt. That's it from us. Darren, thank you very much. Kevin, thank you very much. Speak to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.